What will they actually do once they make ownership of gold illegal? I'm not sure, but the state of Israel does have a history of being extremely effective when it comes to imposing its will on people, and we saw that during COVID. Are they going to actually send people to search houses? Why not? The state of Israel can actually do that. They're evil enough. They're authoritarian enough. The three things that are happening here are the need for money, Israel authoritarian nature, and the ruling elites of Israel being part of the global elites that are trying to enslave all of us, which is sounding a little bit dramatic. But I, you know, after the last 5 years, I think that people that don't believe in that are a little bit blind.
Hey guys, Rafi here from the End Game Investor, and today I have a very important guest. I think one of the most important guests that I've ever interviewed here, because he's going to be talking about a very big issue, which is the possible criminalization of gold and silver ownership in Israel. It hasn't gone through yet. We're going to find out what stages this is at, what is going on here, what needs to pass in order for it to become law. Is it even possible? Why they're doing this? Gilad Alper is a former advisor to the finance ministry in Israel, and he's currently head of the Israeli Libertarian Party. I can say with pride that I voted for him when he ran with Moshe Feiglin in the Zehut Party. Now he has his own party. I hope that, however, it can be possible that all the libertarian-leaning people in Israel can get together and make some change, because we're in dire straits right now. But I have a lot of questions for you. Your tweet kind of lit me up, and lit a lot of other people up. It's a very scary tweet. They were trying to get rid of the 200 shekel bill, which is how this kind of started. That Prime Minister Netanyahu wanted to get rid of the 200 shekel bill. It's very suspicious that he's doing it now when we're in a full-scale war almost. And then I saw from Gilad that included in this is the possible criminalization of holding certain amounts of gold and silver. So Gilad, what is going on here? How are you doing today? Have you had any missiles today? Do you feel okay? Any explosions? I've had a few over my head over here in the north. And just give us a background on what's going on, and then I'll get into more specific questions.
Well, I'm in the center of Israel, right? I live in Ramat Gan, which is a city just next to Tel Aviv, and so far we haven't had anything. So it's kind of business as usual to some extent here. Not really, because everyone is expecting something to happen. But other than that, I'm kind of okay.
Good. Well, I'm okay too. We had some explosions here. But thank God nobody's hurt, and we're just, you know, shaking it off and keep on going.
And going on with our merry way, yeah.
What is going on with the 200 shekel bill and Netanyahu advising the finance minister Smotrich, who I really do not like at all, even though he's right wing and I'm right wing? We do not see eye to eye at all on the liberty issues, and how this is connected to how the 200 shekel bill is connected to gold and silver, and why this is happening now. What is going on?
So over the past few years, I guess it started almost a decade ago, Israel started to limit the amount of cash cash deals, right? It used to be that you can pay in cash with no limit. And then a few years ago, they set a limit at about, I don't remember exactly, but say $5,000. And then it was $3,000. And I think now it's $1,500. So they've been fighting the usage of cash for a few years now. And now it seems like they're taking it up a notch, and they want to cancel, like you say, the 200 shekel bill, supposedly to fight, you know, the underground economy, which is, I think, an excuse. But anyway, this is their excuse. And now that they've said that a few weeks ago, a few days ago, I think, it was published that there is a new proposal by the finance ministry to forbid the ownership of gold and silver, or only of gold, it's not clear yet, by Israeli citizens. And I think what's going on is this is just another part of the crusade against cash. And basically the state of Israel wants to put its citizens in some kind of a financial prison where everything they do has to be done electronically. And of course, completely supervised by the government, by bureaucrats, by regulators. And the way to do it, you know, as well as they want to do it, is to make sure that this prison is sealed shut from all sides. So you need to close all the doors and put bars on all of the windows. And the way you do that is, firstly, you put limits on cash. You start getting rid of notes or bills like the 200 shekels. And part of it, you want to make sure that Israelis won't be able to use any kind of alternative means to pay outside of the electronic system set up by the state. So now they want to make gold ownership illegal. And I'm sure that the next step is going to be the criminalization of crypto and Bitcoin. That is, in my mind, the obvious next step for them to make sure that we are, you know, all in this prison. And again, the excuse they're using is fighting the underground economy, because now, because of the war, there's a big, you know, budget deficit. It could be as big as 10%, maybe 8%. At the moment, it's 8.3%. But it could be much higher than that, depending, of course, on the war and other things, other developments that can happen. And then this is for them a very good time to go to the public and say, hey, if you don't want us to raise taxes, you know, as much higher than they are right now, and they are very high already now, then let us fight those evil people that are part of the underground economy and they don't pay taxes. So we're going to limit the usage of cash, but this is really for you, the citizenry, because, you know, because of that, you won't have to pay that much taxes, and we're going to get back at those evil people that aren't paying taxes anymore. This is basically the overall rationale of what's going on right now.
Okay, so two questions on that. First of all, I read this article on Ynet that the Bank of Israel is not necessarily 100% happy with this proposal by Netanyahu, and I want to ask you why you think that is. But before we get to that, so my theory, and let me know what you think about this, is that, yes, I understand that the black economy and organized crime, whatever it is, they use 200 shekel bills. I don't deny that. We all know that it's true, but that's not the point. The fact is that a lot of, you know, good citizens, good people who are just trying to keep more of their own money use 200 shekel bills and they pay less taxes because they don't have to report as much. And we all know that's true. That's obvious also. So what I think is that if there's a 200 shekel bill ban, then all of these people, or let's steel man it, let's bring it to the full conclusion. If there's no cash in the economy at all, therefore, all the people that are, you know, avoiding taxes, evading taxes, whatever you want to call it, let's say in the shuk, you're buying fruit at a fruit stand and you pay cash, he doesn't report all that, whatever it is, babysitting, you know, all these little things, all these businesses that give you deals and you don't have to pay ma'am, or that's mas erech mosaf, that's VAT, whatever it is, that. In the weeks and months following a cash ban, you're going to have all these people that weren't paying taxes. Now suddenly they have to pay taxes. And so their profit margins either go way down or they go negative, or they have to either cut supply or they have to raise their prices. So you're going to have serious price inflation statistics increasing once you have a cash bill ban. And the second question is, why do you think that the Bank of Israel is fighting back on this? I would have expected them to be totally for it.
Okay, so let me start with the Bank of Israel question. Firstly, I think there's could be, and here I'm completely speculating, right? But I think there could be some kind of a political angle to that, which is the Bank of Israel being upset that the Ministry of Finance hasn't consulted with them, hasn't asked them, and just kind of made a declaration. That's my speculation. But beyond that, the entire field of bills and notes and money is kind of the purview of the Bank of Israel. It is their role to make decisions on that. And I think what the Bank of Israel is scared of, again, I'm kind of speculating here, is that this is going to create kind of a shock to the economy, There's a big part of the economy in Israel that isn't using banks, especially Arabs, by the way, and maybe the ultra-Orthodox. I'm not sure about that, but that's what I'm hearing. And they're, because they're not banking with anyone, you can't expect them to simply switch to a fully digital economy without suffering a shock or without finding other means to replace Israeli money. Because you said that you think the implication is going to be erosion of profit margins and people have to raise prices, whatever. And another thing that could happen is that you're going to have a complete parallel economy using other currencies, especially the US dollar. And assuming that Trump gets elected, then the USA isn't going to get rid of the US dollar or cash anytime soon. And then that's going to be an obvious venue for people in Israel to evade, to continue and operate outside of the normal framework of the economy in Israel, but simply using foreign currency, US dollars, euros, whatever. But US dollars is the obvious option, again, especially if Trump gets elected. And I also think, look, what they're hoping is that they're thinking there's some huge or, you know, criminal organizations that are sitting on piles of money, of cash, and now they're going to have to report them and deposit them because they're going to prefer to pay taxes now rather than losing the entire money because it goes out of circulation. And I think what some of them might try to do is to find a lot of, maybe you can call it mules, right? Giving like 10,000 people, each of them getting, you know, some, I don't know, like 10,000 shekels in cash, which is normal, right? Everyone might be carrying 10,000 shekels in cash. 10,000 shekels is about
$3,000,
right? Yeah, so it's completely justifiable to carry this type of money around, supposedly, I guess. And then they're going to be able, those criminal organizations, to deposit the money using a network of mules or straw people, maybe you want to call them like that. And that's one way I think they can do it. But I'm not an advisor to criminal organizations, so I won't speculate too much about that. I'm just saying that the idea that this is going to kill the black economy or the underground economy is, I think, unrealistic. And also, I think there's a huge exaggeration in the size of the black economy in Israel, because a lot of it are basically illegal activities that will never pay taxes because they're illegal. And I'm talking about selling drugs, sex work, gambling, and poker. All of these things are illegal in Israel. And they're going to be
the Arba Minim, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what you would have expected if we actually had a libertarian government, or at least a libertarian leaning government, which of course we have the opposite of, is for them to maybe decriminalize activities and thereby increase the tax receipts. Another thing they could be doing is maybe try to help the economy grow, right? Because you collect more taxes if the economy is bigger. So maybe you could have expected them to deregulate the economy, to cut the bureaucracy, to maybe make imports free, because Israel is putting huge limitations on all type of imports because Israel is not a free economy. It's a mixed economy at best. You could have expected them to do all that, but what they choose to do is, of course, go the easy, let's go it fascistic route, authoritarian route, and say to the citizens, hey, you can't use cash or gold anymore. And as I said before, and I think that's an important point, crypto is the next domino to fall, I'm sure.
Right. Okay, so two more questions here. The first is, what stage are we at in this bill? Is it even a bill, or is it just a list of recommendations? What's the process here to get it passed? And second is, gold and silver become illegal in whatever quantities. What does that mean? Does that mean that everything that the Israeli government knows that you have, like let's say you bought gold and silver with a company and it's like in your bank, you have a transaction in your bank account that the government knows about, that Mas Hakhnasa knows about, and so they come and then they know about it. But what if you bought it in cash? Are they going to come door to door and knocking at people's doors to say, where is your treasure? Like, how far is this going to go?
Okay, so let me start from the first question. Where it's stand, at the moment, it's only a proposal by the Ministry of Finance. It needs to become law. It needs to go through several committees. It needs to go through the coalition negotiations and all of that. So it's not even clear that it's going to happen. And as you said yourself 5 minutes ago, the Bank of Israel is kind of against it. And it is the role of the Bank of Israel, so it might never happen. But I think the Bank of Israel, is, at least as far as I can tell, is basically for the trend overall of getting rid of cash. But maybe they just want to do it in a different, slower pace. But again, it's a proposal right now. And is it actually going to happen or not? We're going to know over the next few weeks, couple of months, maybe. Now, what will they actually do? What the state will actually do once they make ownership of gold illegal? I'm not sure, but the state of Israel does have a history of being extremely effective when it comes to imposing its will on people, and we saw that during COVID, where lockdowns and stuff like that were enforced quite religiously. But it's
They
not
didn't
clear how
get
much
me. They
they.
didn't get me. I did not take the sh and I did not wear a mask, but you know, that's just one of my pride points. But yeah, it was very, very
Good for
difficult.
you.
And I was very, very
Good for you.
scared during the whole time. Yeah.
Good for you. By the way, because of the lockdowns, Israel has to spend about 200 billion shekels back in 2001, 2002, 200 billion shekels, which are extremely in need, in dire need right now, but we don't have it because we spent it on the COVID and lockdowns and all of that
Yeah.
nonsense. Now, I'm not sure what the state of Israel knows about who owns what in terms of gold, because in Israel, owning gold is actually, at the moment, is in Israel right now, is quite easy. You can buy gold from a licensed dealer, you pay VAT, 17% in Israel, soon to go up to 18%. And once you do that, the gold is yours, it's considered your property. And you don't even have to report it to the tax authorities once you pay it, and you don't have to pay capital gains tax. Assuming, you meet some requirements, you're a private person, you're not selling or not owning huge amounts of gold. I'm not sure exactly what the details are, but what I'm sure of is that the state of Israel isn't completely aware of exactly who owns what. Now, are they going to actually send people to search houses? Why not? The state of Israel can actually do that. They're evil enough. They're authoritarian enough. And I can easily see them do that. Is it realistic? Aren't people simply going to bury gold in their backyard? And gold you can actually bury in the backyard and it doesn't rust, it doesn't tarnish. That's, of course, part of the allure of gold.
Are you worried about government agents going door to door looking for gold and silver, and you don't happen to live in a war zone where bombs are falling constantly and could land in your backyard and shower your entire neighborhood with your coins? Well, you're in luck. Try a dirty man safe. Use code ENDGAME10 at checkout for 10% off. Or store your gold and silver with Monetary Metals. Use the link in the description below where you can earn interest on your ounces in ounces, and it is a safe way to store. If you are not earning interest with Monetary Metals, they store your metal for free until your metal goes into a lease, usually with a jewelry company, and then you get your interest in ounces. Now back to the interview with Gilad Alper.
So I'm not sure how it's going to be done, but I would not underestimate the ability of the state to impose its will on the people.
When I'm asked about gold confiscation, people tell me about FDR in the United States and this and that. I say, this is what I say. I say, yeah, it's possible. But there are much bigger centers of gold for the government to go after. For example, in the United States, just to give an example, the ETFs, right? GLD, IAU, those kinds of ETFs that are traded around by retail investors and other banks and stuff. Like, it's very easy for the government to go in and say, this ETF is mine. I own all the gold now. I mean, they did this with Russian ETFs when the Russian war broke out. They said, all these stocks are mine and all of Russia's assets belong to me. So they could do the same thing with the gold ETFs. But going door to door is going to be very difficult because it's not going to be very efficient. So I'm hoping that they don't do that. I mean,
I'm not sure how they can do it. And once I realize what is a better way or more efficient way to confiscate gold, I'm not going to tell anyone because it's not in my interest. But look, in terms of ETFs and stuff like that, I'm not sure it's in the interest of the state of Israel to get involved in that, because that doesn't serve the purpose of putting all of us in a financial prison. I mean, the point of a financial prison is to make sure that all of your daily transactions are supervised and regulated by the state. Investments in gold, I'm not sure that's a problem for them. I might be mistaken, but I don't see immediately why that would be a problem for the state of Israel.
In terms of how you see this, the development of this, there are more and less conspiratorial mindsets on what is going on here. I tend to the less conspiratorial. Like I try to see things Occam's razor and cut it down. But there are going to be people that are watching this interview with a lot of keen interest that believe that the war with Lebanon broke out specifically so that the state could ban cash and control everything. I'm not really on that page. But what do you see? Like, what is the organic process of what's going on here? Is it just natural tending towards authoritarianism and we're at the end of the rope here? Or is there some kind of plan going on?
Look, there are two things happening at once, or three things, actually. Firstly, it's just the ongoing development of the authoritarian trend of the state of Israel. Israel has been, for instance, Netanyahu has been prime minister since 2009. During this entire tenure of about 15 years, he's done nothing to deregulate the economy, to create reforms, to free the economy, to make us more of a capitalistic country. Israel is one of the least capitalistic countries in the developed world, and Netanyahu hasn't done anything to fix that, to correct that. Also, during COVID, we were one of the most stringent countries in terms of imposing lockdowns, forcing the COVID jabs and all of that stuff. So Israel is already a semi-authoritarian country. Of course, we're not even close to, you know, stuff that is happening in other countries, either around us or in other parts of the world. But we're certainly not as free as better countries like Switzerland, most of the US, and whatever. So this is the first thing that's going on here. Simply the organic, natural development of an authoritarian-leaning country. The second thing is that we need money right now. And one way you can get money is to raise taxes, but of course you don't want to do that too much because then the people are going to hate you even more than they do now already. So what you know, as a state, what you're trying to do is maybe find easier venues to steal money from the people, but not call it theft, call it something else. So this is what's going on right now. And it's quite easy to do it in Israel because most of the citizens in Israel are not aware of what their actual, what we would call natural rights are. They're not aware of the long-term horrible implications of the state gaining full control of our lives. So this is the second thing that's going on here. Simply the state of Israel, politicians, the current government, which is incredibly inept, the Minister of Finance, who's a completely inept, unknowledgeable person. The Minister of Finance, Smotrich, yeah, the one that's kind of advancing all of this nonsense, during COVID, he wanted to basically lock people in their houses.
Yes.
And if they don't want to get COVID shots, they are never allowed to leave their houses again.
So yeah, I know that. I was on the forefront of this battle.
He's that kind of person. He's that bad. So it's very natural for someone like him to promote something so horrible. Now, the third thing that's happening here is that Israel is part of, I think, a nearly global trend, what we call the global government, to make sure that all citizens of all countries of this entire world are slaves to some kind of, I don't know, multinational entity. And of course, as I alluded to earlier, the only way to really make sure that cash isn't used in Israel is to make sure that cash isn't used anywhere else. I mean, there's no point in doing that in Israel if you have the US dollars in Israel, in the US, as cash, because then obviously you're going to use dollars in Israel. Again, or euros, or yen, well, not yen. We won't be using yen here, I'm sure. But we're going to use US dollars, euros, to the extent that that type of cash is going to continue to exist. So again, the three things that are happening here are the need for money, Israel authoritarian nature, and the ruling elites of Israel being part of the global elites that are trying to enslave all of us. Which is sounded a little bit dramatic, but I, you know, after the last 5 years, I think that people that don't believe in that are a little bit blind.
Yeah, well,
or naive.
Mean, just to interject a little bit on that subject. Look, my wife and I were fighting against the COVID tyranny the whole time. We gave it 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and literally I gave it 2 weeks. I was like, okay, I'll put on a mask for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore because I already suspect you. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what the disease is. I'll be careful for 2 weeks. That's it. But I remember the phenomenon that we're dealing with now is that whenever somebody like a potential employer asks my wife, you know, what did you do before? And she says, I worked in XYZ university. Well, why don't you work there anymore? Well, they fired me because I don't have a green pass. They're like, well, what's a green pass? What are you talking about? And they're like, do you remember the whole thing? It was like, they're like, yeah. What do you mean? They're like, well, they fired me because I didn't take a vaccine. I was like, oh, they didn't do that. What are you talking about? That's just a bunch of nonsense. Well, you know, and they laugh at you. But they don't even remember what they were doing at the time. It's like it's totally like wiped clear. But that's just how people yeah. deal with it. So that's just a side point. But I wanted to ask you a parallel question, and if you can try to relate it to what's going on now. But 1984, Israel went through a hyperinflation. I don't know how old you were at that time. I was one, so I don't remember it, and I didn't live here.
I was more than one, but they don't want to say by how much more.
Yeah. Okay. So how did Israel get out of that? Why didn't they go into mega authoritarian moves like outlawing gold and silver back then? What was going on, and how did that end?
The way they got out of it is that they passed some major economic reforms. They cut the budget dramatically. They stopped printing money. They made it illegal for the Bank of Israel to print money as a way to cover budget deficits. And that was mostly it. That was mostly it. There was some kind of, I think, a price freeze that was put back then for a limited period of time. They also dismantled some of the government-owned businesses and entities. They basically passed some very, very useful reforms. There was no other option. Israel, unlike places like the US or Germany or other very large economies, we don't have the luxury of being completely irresponsible, right? Because no one needs the Israeli shekel. We are a fairly small economy, or a very small economy still, although not as small as it used to be, obviously. So we have to be responsible; otherwise, we won't be able to raise money from investors, right? The government won't be able to raise money. For instance, back in 2002, when Netanyahu was finance minister, the interest rate on the government debt of Israel went up to 12%. We can't pay 12%. This is basically bankruptcy, or at least the gateway to bankruptcy. So, and then that's why in 2002, Netanyahu had to pass some major reforms, mainly cutting down on the welfare state. So we do what we need to do only when we don't have a choice, when we are really on the brink of bankruptcy or complete collapse or whatever. And by the way, I think that's what's going to happen over the next few years. Yeah. I think the government right now is doing everything wrong. they are just basically raising taxes, making life even more horrible for all of us. And this is going to destroy the economy. I think what the biggest threat right now on the state of Israel is the high tech basically leaving Israel, right? High tech engineers, developers, scientists leaving Israel. They can leave Israel very easily because their skills are very much sought after outside of Israel, and the economy is based on them. 60% of Israel's exports is high tech, is technology, right? And once these guys start to leave, to immigrate from Israel, then the economy is going to tank, possibly get completely destroyed. And then they won't have a choice but to pass all of these reforms that they don't want to pass right now because it's not in their interest. So I think my only hope is that once this collapse happens, it won't be too late. Because you can imagine that at some stage, if enough engineers leave, enough scientists escape Israel, enough people immigrate to other countries, we won't have enough of a critical mass to recover the economy. You have to have some kind of, a number of smart people. You have to have entrepreneurs. You have to have smart people that want to create stuff. And if the majority of these people or all of them have left the country, then who's going to take their place? And the answer is no one. And also another problem is that the number of people that are actually engaged in Israel in the tech industry is a lot smaller than what people realize. We're talking about something like 3,000 entrepreneurs and about 40,000 or 50,000 really, really good engineers. I mean, overall, we have something like 300,000 people working in the industry. But of those 300,000 people, only 40 or 50,000 people are the ones that are actually, promoting innovation. And if these people leave, or if a big enough percentage of them leave, then we have a huge problem. The Israeli shekel is going to collapse. Our standard of living is going to collapse. And what is worse, or what is by far worse, is that we won't be able to finance the army. Right? Israel can't exist like Greece does, right? We can't be a poor country. Israel cannot exist as a poor country because we need a very big army. And the only way to finance a very big army is to have a thriving economy, or at least thriving to a degree. And without a thriving economy, which is going to be the case if they take in, if tech basically escapes the country, we can't have an army. If you can't have an army, we can't have a state. And that's going to be the end of us. So things are actually a lot worse than what people realize, in my mind.
Well,
we can actually win this war. Let's say we win the war. I mean, so what? We still are going to have over the next few years a defense budget that is double what it was before the war started. We're going to have people serving 45 days a year in the reserve. We're going to have people 18 years old being conscripted into the army for 3 years. And so on and so forth. I don't want to start and badmouth Israel too much, but let me just say that things aren't very good here. And the real danger, again, in my mind, is not so much the war itself, but the economy. That's the big risk. And the government, the state, politicians seem to be completely oblivious to this reality.
My final thought on this is that, yes, Israel is falling apart. I'm not denying that, but I am still positive about it because I see the rest of the world, and I see the rest of the world, including the United States and Europe, they're all falling apart too. Everyone's falling apart. They're losing the values that once made them great. What's going on in the U.S. is even scarier with all these, surgeries on children, not even knowing what boys and girls are. They're getting down to the basics of society that they've completely forgotten, and they don't know what's going on. And we've got a seriously scary authoritarian, and it's not Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is just the representative front of it, of whatever's behind her that's doing it. And who knows what's going to happen to the country if she's elected, or she cheats to become elected, or whatever is going to happen. Look, we got through 1984. Israel got through 1984. We got through a hyperinflation. The Jewish people have gotten through worse than this. We're going to get through this too. I don't know exactly how. But when we are pushed, my final thought is then when we are really pushed and our lives are getting really hell and we're running out of money and we can't finance the army and all this, we're going to remember who we are. We're going to come back to who we are. And we're God's people, in my view. And you can say whatever you want about that. But we'll come back to who we are like we always have. And it's going to be very difficult, but we'll do it. As for the rest of the world, I don't know, which is why I'm staying here and I'm not leaving. And I know how dire it is. And I know how dire it is in the rest of the world. And somehow we will get through this together. And gold and silver are a big part of it, I am sure.
So let me firstly agree that the entire world is falling apart. Well, in Europe mostly, I guess, but also in the US. And of course, if Kamala Harris gets elected, then this is going to push all of us, you know, to the brink or over it. But let me be a little bit less philosophical and more practical. Let's say you're a software engineer in Israel. You're 30 years old. Let's say you're single or you have a wife and a kid, whatever. Now, you're facing two options. The first option is stay in Israel. Stay in Israel. Taxes are going to get a lot higher over the next few years. Real estate in Israel is extremely expensive. Although you're a software engineer, you're getting paid very well in Israeli standards. You can't afford buying a house in Tel Aviv without taking a huge mortgage. Actually, in Tel Aviv, you just can't afford it. But even if you want to live in the center of Israel, outside of Tel Aviv, you need to mortgage your entire life. The education system is one of the worst in the Western world. Yeah. You're going to spend 45 days every year serving in the army. Your kid, when he reaches 18, is going to be conscripted into the army for 3 years. The health system is getting worse and worse. So this is the first option. Now, you're sitting in your home and you're getting a phone call from a headhunter in Prague, right? And he tells you, hey, why don't you move to Prague? We have a great job for you as a software engineer because we know how great Israeli engineers are. The cost of living in Prague is 30 or 40% lower than what it is in Israel. Crime rates are maybe the lowest in Europe. By the way, in Prague or in the Czech Republic, you're allowed to own guns to protect yourself, which is something you're not allowed to do in Israel. The education system is better. The anti-Semitism level in the Czech Republic is relatively low. Your personal safety is going to be much better. You won't be serving in the army. Your kid won't be serving in the army. Mm-hmm. So why don't you come over? Who's going to say no to that? And if as a software engineer you have some moral issues with the notion of leaving Israel and running away, you can very easily lie to yourself. You can say, hey, I'm moving only for a couple of years to see what it's like to live outside of Israel. It's just a temporary relocation. I'm going to save some money and then go back to Israel. You can tell yourself 10,000 stories if you like. But the point remains that if I was right now, you know, I'm a Zionist, probably as much as you are. I'm heading a party in Israel, so I have political ambitions. But still, if I were 30 years old and I was a software engineer and now some headhunter would come to me and offer me to move to Prague, I don't see why I would say no to that.
Right.
And that's a very practical, immediate problem that could hit Israel right. It's hitting Israel right now. There's talk about leaving Israel from all sides. I'm hearing that all day long. Well, I'm exaggerating a little bit, right? But I'm hearing a lot. And so you can say with the chosen people or whatever, yes, well, we are the chosen people, but we also do want good schools. We don't want to pay a lot of taxes. We don't want to die in the army. We don't want any of that. We want to live well. People want to live well. What you're saying, or the point of view of this is the, you know, the Holy Land or whatever, this relates especially for religious people. Most of Israel isn't religious. Most of the people in Israel is like me, which is Zionists, obviously. Mm-hmm. But also we want to live well. And we don't think that because Israel is the Holy Land, that justifies us living a lousy type of life here, where we can have a much, much better standard of living and quality of life in places like Prague, Budapest, maybe Texas, maybe Florida, maybe the Far East, who knows what. So I think it's extremely dangerous to disregard or underestimate the threat of people leaving Israel over the next couple of years. And I'll repeat myself, what I'm saying, what politicians are doing right now, what the state of Israel is doing right now, seems to be completely designed to make sure that people do leave. And I think they're not doing that because they know that's going to be the result. They're doing that because they're lousy politicians and lousy people, like most politicians are, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Look, I completely agree with everything you're saying. I have no counter argument. What you're saying is completely correct. And at the same time, I still have faith that somehow everything is going to turn out okay, because I have no other alternative than to think that.
Yeah,
that's how I think.
Let me just interject for a second and add that the assumption, and this could be the assumption, this is what could be happening going through the minds of politicians in Israel. They might be thinking, kind of, you know, echoing what you said 5 minutes ago, which is, oh, things outside of Israel are so bad, they won't be able to escape anyway. So we can victimize them as much as we like. And that's, firstly, an evil way to think about stuff, but it's also completely wrong. It's completely wrong. At least for the next 5-10 years, it's completely wrong. Prague is over there, Budapest, Poland, Eastern Europe is doing quite well, mostly. The southern part of the US is doing quite well. And if Trump gets elected, in a way, that's a big threat on Israel, because then the US, I think, is going to be a lot more alluring or tempting from the point of view of Israelis. And that could actually quicken the process of people escaping Israel. So I'm not optimistic, in short.
Okay. I am optimistic, but I can't give you specific reasons why. Look, maybe I'm suicidal. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think I am. In my view, we don't have a long time until the end game. And the end game, I mean, by the end game, in an economic sense, I mean the end of the convertibility between the dollar, which is the world's reserve currency, and gold. Once the dollar falls, the entire global monetary system falls, and then everything falls with it, and then we're going to have to rebuild from the bottom up. I think that's coming up in the next short time period. I don't know exactly what happens after that, but we're all going to have to get through that over here, over there, and we're all really in the same monetary system, all based on the U.S. dollar, because the Bank of Israel owns no gold. It only owns U.S. dollars. The shekel is a dollar derivative, and once the dollar goes, the shekel goes, and everything goes with it.
So, forgive me, but let me, you know, kick this dead horse once more.
Okay.
Say what you say actually transpires. You know, the global monetary system falls apart. I don't know, huge crises everywhere. Mm-hmm. Where do you prefer to be? In Israel, where you're not allowed to own guns or gold, or in Prague, where you are allowed to own gold and guns? Where is better?
The way you phrase it, it sounds like Prague is better, but I would rather be here, because I'd be worried about how Prague will be if the dollar collapses, which means that the euro collapses too. And I'd rather be among Jews than among the Gentiles, and that's just me.
Okay. Okay. You actually might be right. I'm not sure, because we're talking about something very
abstract,
you know, abnormal or abstract, or something that's never happened before, or at least hasn't happened in our lifetimes and over the past century or so. But I would just say that what I find very frustrating about all of this is it doesn't have to be like that. Israel can be very easily as economically free as Switzerland. And then we're going to be double as rich as we are now. We're going to be able to finance a huge army, pay a lot less taxes, and all of it simply through some technical capitalistic reforms like deregulation and freeing imports and trade and property rights and all of the, you know, normal libertarian principles. You can do all of that technically quite easily, politically extremely hard, but again, technically quite easily. So it's frustrating that stuff that can be that could happen, again, easily isn't happening. Actually, the opposite is happening and just pushing us further and further to the brink. So that's, I think, is very tragic.
Yeah, it is. It is. But let's I want to stay positive because I am positive and I'm not, again, I'm not denying anything that you're saying. And I'm working as hard as I can in what I'm good at, because that's what I do. And look, just thank you for all that you're doing and all the political work that you're doing and staying here. And, you know, I'll give you any support that I can, which is why I'm having you on the show. Just to tell you, there are libertarians here. There are some people that understand what's going on. And we're going to triumph, either this generation, next generation, because we have the truth. And that's just the facts. You know, I just hope I'm not part of the collateral damage of the communist founders of this country. And hopefully we can all have a much freer life with gold and silver and guns and everything else that we need. And defense, and less rockets above my head. So it was really great talking to you, Gilad. I hope we can do this again soon, and I hope to see you in the Knesset as soon as possible.
Thank you very much, Rafi. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you, Gilad. Are you worried about government agents going door to door looking for gold and silver, and you don't happen to live in a war zone where bombs are falling constantly and could land in your backyard and shower your entire neighborhood with your coins? Well, you're in luck. Try a Dirty Man safe. Use code ENDGAME10 at checkout for 10% off. Or store your gold and silver with Monetary Metals. Use the link in the description below where you can earn interest on your ounces in ounces. And it is a safe way to store. If you are not earning interest with Monetary Metals, they store your metal for free until your metal goes into a lease, usually with a jewelry company, and then you get your interest in ounces.